And what we just have to call Thomas Grant's erotica. Thomas Grant's erotica.
Corsi.
Thomas Grant's erotica.
Expected goals.
Thomas Grant's erotica.
Doll model.
Thomas Grant's erotica.
Regression.
Thomas Grant's erotica.
PDO.
Thomas Grant's erotica.
8:03 on a Thursday. Happy Thursday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer. Today, we are in hour three of the program. It is What We Learn time. Hour three is brought to you by, or it's not What We Learn time, it's Thomas Durant's time. Hour three is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today. I said it was What We Learn time because someone is insisting in the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket that the series is going to start on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, friend, while that may be true, we can't say with 100% certainty that the series is starting on Sunday. 100% certainty.
Until it's announced.
Until it's announced by the NHL.
But the sports bar at Rogers Arena has apparently sent out an email saying it's Sunday.
And so I love your zest for life and the playoffs. Mm. And I do not question that you received an email. But while we are not beacons of proper journalism, even Bruff and I know that dude who said he got an email from a bar is not a proper source. We can't go 100%.
We'd love it to be.
I'd love it to be.
We'd love all the news in the world to be.
A lot of reports.
Come from the bar, and then we would just set
source,
up.
Trust me, bro.
Set up at the bar and be like, we're going to get some news here. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintec, that's what you're waiting for. To the phone lines we go. Thomas Drance joins us now on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Drancer?
Well, gentlemen, I'm excited about Sunday.
100% going to happen. Drancer, where is the Canucks' advantage over the Nashville Predators? And if there is one, where is Nashville's advantage over the Vancouver Canucks?
Yeah, it's actually a pretty fascinating stylistic clash. I mean, we know that Vancouver crushed the Predators, frankly, in their three head-to-heads this season, but Nashville's kind of become a different team over the course of the year. And this isn't super uncommon with clubs that have a new head coach, right? I mean, the second half of the year, it seemed like they unlocked stylistically how to win. And the way they win is by generating just a mass volume of scoring chances. And honestly, they're pretty good defensively too. I mean, they're not the Canucks, which is, I guess, where you start with where the Canucks have an advantage. It's just sort of defense. Like, defensively, the Canucks limit scoring chances at a higher level than the Predators do. The Predators play a higher event game. So, shutdown hockey, right there, that's Vancouver's biggest edge, I think, in the series. But, you know, beyond that, I think they have the edge on special teams. I mean, the Predators are worse on the PK than Vancouver. I think that's the only Western Conference playoff team that description applies to. So, you know, Vancouver's narrowly better on the power play. They're pretty similar in terms of their special teams, sort of like they're narrowly better on the power play. They're narrowly better on the PK. So you'd add special teams to the mix is something that's an edge for the Canucks. I'd probably add goaltending. Saros is incredible. I mean, we are talking about one of the five best, the five most consistent, the five most durable goaltenders in hockey. Like, he's a legit workhorse starter, but, you know, Demko is going to be rested here and you know, has been better on balance this season and not by a slim margin, like by a fair bit. You know, there's also the height thing with Saros. Obviously, he's overcome that, but the Canucks are a team of one-shot scorers. There's a lot of one-shot scoring talent on this Canucks roster, and that can be an issue That can be an issue for a smaller goaltender, no matter how good they are, no matter how well adapted they are to you know, overcoming that at the NHL level. It's one thing to overcome that at the NHL level over 82 games. It's another in a 7-game series where you're facing Miller and Pettersson and company on an every game basis. So that would be the other place. Now, that's a lot of edges for the Canucks, right? Because I'd add this one too. You know, I think you'd take Vancouver's elite talent, the high-end talent, over Nashville, although maybe not by as much of an edge as it looks on paper, just given that Josi is, you know, going to be number two on a lot of Norris ballots and deserves to be, given the fact that Philip Forsberg's going to be, you know, pretty much a cinch to be second team all NHL, right? I mean, Vancouver has a greater depth of star talent or superstar talent, but, you know, Nashville's not without, some, I don't know, twinkles in the sky of its own. But the main edge that the Predators have here, I think, is stylistic. So, you know, if you look at how the Predators play, right, they generate scoring chances at a totally different rate than the Canucks do. And in fact, you know, a pretty much top three team, top five team in the NHL in terms of how they generate scoring chances, even though they don't have, you know, a McDavid, Matthews, McKinnon guy, mm-hmm. like most of the other top offenses in the league, they are a team that generates just a wild amount of zone time.
And, so how do they do it, Drantz?
Yeah, you know, the X's and O's of it is difficult for me to pinpoint. But about midway through the season, they started to generate scoring chances like just about nobody other than the Colorado Avalanche. And here's the one thing that they do really well defensively, too. I mean, they do a lot defensively really well. But one of the main things is they limit zone time. Like, they are very hard to stack heavy shifts up against relative to everyone else in the league. Like, they're the second best team in the NHL at denying zone time. And while Vancouver doesn't generate a ton of scoring chances, they do generate, like, the Canucks do generate a ton of zone time, right? Like, they're fourth in the league in sort of offensive zone time, even though that doesn't show up in the rate at which they generate chances, mm-hmm. right? They play it pretty conservatively. They try to limit what you generate off the rush, in part by holding the puck like Vancouver does, by holding the puck in the offensive end. You know, and you see those long shifts, especially with Hughes and Hronek on the ice, where Canucks forwards start to change. And Vancouver's pretty dangerous in those moments, right? The Predators just are really tough to get those types of shifts against and are really good at attacking off the rush. So, because that's definitely a big part of it. I mean, this is a pretty aggressive rush team. So, you know, I know there's an old adage out there across sports, right? A good defense beats a good offense. And you need both. Like, you need both. This is no longer the, you know, win 2-1 in the playoffs NHL, although we will see some playoff games like that, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. This is a higher scoring league. This is a league where two guys just had 100 assists and one guy almost scored 70 goals. And, you know, there's like 40 guys in the league that would have won the Art Ross Trophy in 2014. So, you know, the Predators' ability to generate does mean that they tend not to be out of games. And Vancouver's really good when they get the lead. Vancouver's, you know, expert at sort of choking the oxygen out of games, especially when they're leading. But doing that against this Predators team, like the thing that Vancouver's best at, frankly, get the early lead, kill the game. You know, that's a huge challenge against this Predators team. I think they're going to have to be conscious of sort of building on those leads throughout this series.
So, Drantzer, I know what the analytics say. I even referenced them earlier in the show when I just brought up the expected goals for per 60 at 5-on-5, and I think the Preds are only behind Edmonton and Carolina in that category. Having said that, if you're looking at the Preds' lines and then you're looking at the Canucks' lines, let's say that Rick Tocchet in games one and two, when he's got last change, puts the Lindholm line with Garland and Joshua out against Ryan O'Reilly, Gustav Nyquist, and Philip Forsberg. Does that, and I'm not saying that's going to happen, I'd love to get your thoughts on what will happen, but to me, there should be some matchups that the Pettersson line should win and the JT Miller line should win when you're going up against the Preds. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, no, I do agree. I don't look at it as a given, though, that that's a matchup that the Predators, like the Lindholm line's going to have to be at a really high level to make that an edge stick. Like, I think playing the Lindholm line against Ryan O'Reilly, Forsberg, and Nyquist is something of a risk. Because there is a chance for sure, in my view, that is a matchup that would favor Nashville to an extent that you could get chased from it, mm-hmm. right?
But even if you lose it slightly, then you should be able to make up for it with Miller and Pettersson.
You can lose it significantly, but you can lose it significantly territorially, so long as it doesn't burn you on the scoreboard, right? The way Nashville generates chances, though, that makes me a little nervous. And, you know, we know what Dakota Joshua and Connor Garland can do together. We've seen it all year, but, you know, as good as it's been to see Lindholm look more impactful since his return from injury and since that line was united, you know, to this point, I don't think we should look at that line and give it the same level of, or have the same level of confidence in its ability to drive play that we did when Bluger was in the middle of that line and they were playing earlier in the year. You know, like to this point across three games, it's not like we're seeing the same level of just like ice tilting dominance that we saw from the Canucks third line when it sort of, carried this team for a stretch, frankly, from like late November through the first couple weeks of January, like until that New York trip when they put Lotto together. So, you know, for me anyway, there's certainly a possible advantage to be mined there, but you're asking a lot of the third line in that equation. And then also I think you're counting on, you know, you're counting on like that Colton Sissons checking line, which, yeah, look, it's got Mark Jankowski in it, so I get it. You're looking at it on paper and being like, that's a feast for the Pettersson line, right? But it's like, okay, that's a feast for the Pettersson line territorially, or you're also going to expect that line with Ilya Mikheyev to do damage offensively against Saros, and then you're looking at, you know, JT Miller, Brock Besser against that Novak Evangelista line. And again, I know those are relatively anonymous names, but those are also guys who can do damage. Mm-hmm. And then you do have a Nashville defense, like a defense core, where there's going to be an awful lot of size, an awful lot of experience, you know, and a player in Josi who, yes, he gets his headlines for the way that he attacks off the rush. But, I mean, there's like a little bit of Chris Tanev there in terms of how he blocks shots, how he can suffocate things. So, I mean, the edges are obvious and they are in Vancouver's favor, but I don't look at them as being as overwhelming as it seems, right? Like if you look at daily faceoff and look through those top three lines, you're like, man, there's a bunch of guys there that wouldn't crack Vancouver's top nine. Certainly at least three guys, but that's sort of not what matters, right? It's going to be more about the style, and it's going to be more about whether or not the gamble that you're talking about, whether the third line, whether that Lindholm line can really hold against, you know, a Forsberg, O'Reilly, Nyquist trio that's been among the NHL's best at outscoring opponents 5-on-5 since it was put together.
We're speaking to Thomas Drantz from the Athletic Vancouver and Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I was listening to Chris Mason. He was on with Sat and Dan on the pregame show yesterday as they did a little Preds look ahead. And he was talking about the one big stylistic change that Andrew Burnett did over John Hines. And that was, especially with guys like Josi, who almost was like a one-man zone entry. Like he was so good at carrying the puck in. And he was good at getting it in. But the speed in which they would enter the zone was what Brunette wanted to change. So instead of Yossi skating, it quickly became Yossi, you're going to be the quick up man, quick pass. We're going to get this thing going. The Preds have seen their goals per game jump. They're at 3.18 this year, up from 2.72. So the proof is in the pudding a little bit there. To me, it's almost like instead of the matchup stuff, I do wonder if that's going to be the key. If the Canucks can figure out the transition game that the Preds have kind of reinvented this year, that might be the key to unlocking the entire series.
Well, that's how the Canucks win, right? Like when they get the early lead and then they still forecheck deep, right? Like this isn't a team that sits back, but what they do in Edmonton, that Edmonton game was like a perfect template for it, right? You get the early lead off the Sam Lafferty goal. And then they're not playing Kings hockey. They're coming at you still with their forwards. And you know, obviously they're not like upset if they're able to force a turnover down low with their forecheckers. But the primary function of the forecheck is to herd you into this neutral zone wedge with, the one forward who's back and usually some significant back pressure coming at you too. And the size of Vancouver's defense is pretty capable of playing aggressively. Like they're literally looking to squeeze you in the neutral zone. And then counterattack really quickly, right? Like that's right back into the other end of the rink where they look to generate zone time more than they look to generate scoring chances. And that's just incredibly frustrating. And we saw it wear down the Oilers. That said, if you are able to connect passes, and that's so much easier said than done, but it's like if you're able to make five consecutive skill plays, you can bust the wedge. And if you do, there are rush chances to be had against the Canucks. Like we've seen, I thought the Winnipeg game was a good template of it, right? Where it was like Winnipeg was, the Canucks played really well in that. I'm talking about the 4-2 loss to Winnipeg, where Winnipeg played really well throughout the game, but then eventually they solved the wedge and just like punished it twice consecutively.
They got through all those border collies out there herding everyone into. But border collies have a lot of energy, right?
Yeah, they do. Well, and the Canucks, this is one of the reasons I think they've played so well all season, right? Like I think there's a real script. I think they know how to win. I think they're confident in those moments. So, you know, if they score first, I think we know what it looks like. And with, you know, between Yossi, between Carrier, between the way that this team can move the puck and attack off the rush, again, I think they're the second half identity that the Predators have found is like an absolutely fascinating matchup for the way that Vancouver tries to win games for me. Because this is a team that's built to pass through. This is a team that's built to break out as a group and find sort of some of those chances. It's a tough way to live. I'm sure the Predators would rather be leading in some of those games, mm-hmm. but you know, this is one of those instances where it kind of feels like both teams' strengths are in almost perfect contrast to the other. And so it's going to be decided effectively by which team does the thing they're best at better than the other team does the thing they're best at, which happens to be the thing that attacks what the other team is best at. So that's going to be a ton of fun. Like, bring it on. Let's get to Sunday. Let's fast forward through game 82 here.
Drancer, I have a two-part question here. What did you think? You were talking about passing plays, and what did you think of that passing play that the Pettersson line put together the other night, which ended with Hoglander scoring yet another goal? I believe the passing went Mikheyev to Petey to start the breakout. Petey back to Mikheyev through the neutral zone with Mikheyev hitting the opposition line with speed. Mikheyev gets his head up, cross-ice pass to Petey, and then Petey really calmly, and he uses that deceptiveness that we haven't really seen enough of, to slide that pass across to Hoglander to finish the net, to finish it off. Was that a good sign for the Canucks heading into the playoffs?
It was because the pass Mikheyev makes to hit Pettersson, the sort of like stop up cross seam, mm-hmm. use your speed, to build the space, and then it's a pinpoint pass to Petey. I hope that that'll help build his confidence and provide that line with sort of a template of how they can score, because the Canucks, to me, you know, I don't want to say like they feel a top six forward short, but they kind of do, right? There's games, moments in games. There's certainly been moments as their offense has cooled massively since the All-Star break where, you know, that it's felt like that on occasion, especially when Mikheyev's been on Pettersson's wing. So, you know, I hope that it serves as something of like a playbook for how Mikheyev can support that line offensively with his speed, for the skill plays that he can make, that we've seen him make in a Canucks uniform, even if we haven't seen them as frequently the last 4 months. But I wouldn't take anything else that we saw from that game, which was like the least Canucks-y game we've seen all season, as instructive of anything, right? Like the Canucks were like trading chances, which this Canucks team doesn't do. And the Canucks were trading chances and Rick Tocchet was joking about it post-game, which Rick Tocchet doesn't do. So
I have a follow-up question that I need to get to. How much pushback did you get in the comments section of The Athletic when you released your report cards and gave Elias Pettersson an A?
A little bit, but I mean, I don't know what else. I don't know how else to do it once you actually like look at it. Once you actually look at the data, once you really like sort of peer into it, it didn't feel like an A season at times for sure. Although, you know, I think that means that we're forgetting all the times that it really, really did, like the week that they put Lotto together or the first 2 months of the year. Right. There were definitely moments where it felt like Pettersson went nuke for weeks at a time, but there were also weeks at a time where it felt like it was quiet around him. And then, you know, when you get to looking at it and you're like, okay, you know, every all-in-one metric, whether it's net rating, whether it's, you know, goals above replacement, whatever, all have him among top 10 forwards in the NHL. He was literally outscored by six NHL centermen, or at least at the time we wrote it. So I checked this yesterday, but the, you know, only Crosby, Dreisaitl, Miller, McDavid, Matthews, McKinnon outscored him among NHL centermen. He was tied with Point Naho. Point probably passed him given how many goals the Lightning scored yesterday. But, you know, in any event, top 10 among centermen, and really only six guys clearly ahead of him while the games truly mattered. I think the frustration comes from that we got a floor season from Pettersson, and we've seen what ceiling seasons look like from Pettersson. You know what I mean? And so I think there was
That's why I don't think he deserved an A. I think he was at his floor.
Well, sure. But if your floor is still one of the 10 most valuable forwards in the league and 90 points over 82 games.
Well, you're going to put yourself into a corner here. What if he has a ceiling season? What are you going to give him, an A plus, 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 plus?
I just give him an A plus. I mean, we left some room to upgrade the award, but like given all of that, and then the team's success and the fact that he massively improved in the faceoff circle and put in one of his best defensive seasons that we've seen, right? Like in terms of his defensive level, it went up. I don't know. I mean, 90 points in that, it feels like a lot of the hand wringing just like doesn't really make sense. So partly too, we wanted to be an antidote to that because, you know, I know how it's felt, and yet Pettersson's value remains sort of beyond question. I think it's worth reminding people of that, especially your listeners, bro.
Well, we'll see. I with that grade, I just hope Petey gets into the school that he wants. I know he's got his sight set on Ivy League. I don't know. I know he's not going to get a reference letter from me though. So
how are your
we'll
extra
see.
Elias? How are your extracurriculars this year?
Drancer, thanks, buddy.
Anytime.
Have a good one. See you, buddy. That's Thomas Drance from the Athletic Vancouver and Canucks talk here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. We got to go to break. When we come back, it's What We Learn time. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Big Nizar. Have your say and join me on the People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
for my favorite part of the show. What did I say? Talk to the audience. Oh, God, this is always dead.
It's what we learn time. It's what we learn time. It's what we learn time. On the show.
...8:34 on a Thursday. Happy Thursday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dulari family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dulari difference today by visiting your nearest Dulari Acura dealer today. We are in Hour 3 of the program. It is What We Learn time. Hour 3 is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today. I have a What We Learn. Hot off the presses. Just kidding. It's on Twitter. The Canucks have announced that they have agreed to terms with forward Vasily Podkolzin on a 2-year contract extension. Financial terms not released. Canucks general manager said, quote, or general manager Patrick Alvin said, quote, "We're happy with how hard Vasily has worked on his game and to try and become a more consistent player. While there is still room for him to grow, starting the year in Abbotsford and working his way back up to Vancouver shows the type of commitment and dedication we want in all of our players. Our group looks forward to helping Vasily continue to improve and get better."
Vasily Podkolzin.
So Podkolzin,
it's come a long way since then, when it was an entirely different name.
Podkolzin is hoping to follow the path of Nils Höglander, who signed a 2-year contract extension after his entry-level contract expired. And then this season really started to break out for the Canucks. And he ended up scoring, well, he might score 25 goals. What's he at, 24 right now? Which is terrific value.
Yep.
For $1.1 million this season. And then next season, it's going to be a similar type of deal for Podkolzin. And hopefully Podkolzin can up the production. I mean, hope he does it now, but you know, over the next 2 years is going to be really important because the Canucks are going to have some decisions to make, especially on the wing, whether it's as soon as this offseason with a guy like Dakota Joshua, or maybe the following season, or even this offseason with a guy like Brock Besser. They will have decisions to make, and it's always so much easier to make those tough decisions when you do have young players on good contracts making a push from below.
How much do you think he'll feature in the, let's just say, this first round against
Nash? I think he'll be on the fourth line.
You think he'll be in?
I think he'll be in, yeah. I think he'll be in.
I bet, yeah, when I want a hot take, sure. Podkolzin scores his first goal of the season, because he had 0 in 18 games. He scores his first goal of the season in this Nashville series. He's going to be fired up. He's got a 2-year contract in his pocket. He's young. He's got some energy, mm-hmm, some juice, if you will.
I have regrets about so willingly throwing Höglander into trade rumors.
At the beginning of the year?
The beginning of the year. Or even later in the year.
You know what?
Even later in the year.
Yeah, but that got him going. It was all you.
It's true.
Take credit for it.
But there was a lot of people that pushed back, and I think ultimately they were proven correct that you got to keep a guy like Höglander, just not because of what he's doing on the ice, but the value that he brings.
Was it they were proven right or you were wrong?
Well, that's more importantly.
Yeah,
that's
wrong. Both. I think so.
You know what,
though? I mean, basically what I said was like, I think Jake Guentzel is such a good player that I'd be willing to entertain putting Höglander into a deal.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Guentzel probably right now is a better player than Nils Höglander, but it's kind of the long-term versus the short-term with him.
Sure. I'll be curious to...
Guentzel could help push the Hurricanes over the top and get them a Stanley Cup. We'll know what was worth it and what wasn't when the playoffs are over.
Anyway, kudos to Podkolzin for his new 2-year extension, and I hope he can fulfill my prophecy of getting his first goal of the season in this upcoming series against Nashville. Moo cow me.
More importantly, Halford will finally see a hot take come to pass.
Yeah, it's not great for Podkolzin, actually, now that I think
about
it.
Cursed
now
me.
That I'm playing it out in my head. Brav fired up Höglander. I might have done the inverse.
Mm-hmm.
You got one?
Yeah, I do have one, and I learned that the new head coach of the Seattle Seahawks is really trying to flip the page on the Pete Carroll era, the Russell Wilson era, the Legion of Boom era. Okay. Now, what he's doing strikes me as something that a rookie head coach does and may come to regret.
This is Mike McDonald.
This is Mike McDonald, the new head coach of the Seattle Seahawks.
Not the former member of the Doobie Brothers.
No. And there was a Canadian comedian, or there is a Canadian comedian called Mike McDonald. He has removed all the murals that line the hallway of the Seahawks team headquarters, posters, murals, whatever they are. I'm reading the News Tribune here. The photos were constant reminders of the Seahawks' greatest moments by their greatest players in their greatest era. There was Richard Sherman's The Tip. There was Marshawn Lynch, Beastquake Run. Sherman returning an interception in Houston without one of his shoes on. Golden Tate after the Fail Mary touchdown. Russell Wilson weeping in joy into the NFC Championship trophy. Celebrating the Super Bowl. Pete Carroll, John Schneider, Paul Allen raising the Super Bowl trophy. They've all been removed, and it's just blank right now. Mm-hmm. I do think, and this is something that Rick Tockett said yesterday or recently in an interview that was in the Province newspaper, and he said, as a head coach, you have to come in and you have to take your swings. You have to bet on yourself and bet on what you think needs to happen, and you have to be decisive. There's usually three or four things that you go, okay, this is what I'm going to try and do. It might be doubted by some. It might be called potentially stupid by people on Vancouver radio.
Yep.
But I got to take my swings. And if I go 0 for 3 and I strike out, I whiff on all these things, then I'm probably going to be fired. But a head coach has to be decisive. He has to do what he thinks are right. If players sense that there's some wishy-washiness, then the players are never going to respond. So this is apparently what Mike McDonald, and probably John Schneider, for that matter, think needs to happen in Seattle. You just need to be like, we aren't that team anymore.
Yep.
And I get kind of why he'd be doing that. Like, the decision last year to bring back Bobby Wagner, I think in hindsight was a mistake, because the Seahawks had to move on from that era. Oh. And that now they've moved on from Bobby Wagner, Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson, essentially that era. And they need to create a new legacy for this group. But at the same time, you're kind of like, can't you just still keep that stuff up there? Like, isn't this maybe a little heavy-handed to do it this way?
There's only one photo that remains in the hallway. It's a framed picture of team owner Jody Allen.
Right.
She's also going to play middle linebacker this year. Moo cow, bruv.
Good for her.
Yeah. She's feisty. No Bobby Wagner. Now it's all Jody Allen. Okay, let's fire up the matrix. Print out some humanoid submissions for What We Learned. What We Learned humanoid submission is brought to you by Get Fire Plan. Protect what matters most with comprehensive fire safety plans, monthly audits, and risk mitigation at $200 off. Visit them at getfireplan.com.
Oh, my God! We're having a fire!
Plan.
Well, who's got one flagged here? Because I was doing the reads.
I got this one. Chris Good. From Nanaimo. What I learned is car flags are back!
Yeah, they are!
Three separate cars during school drop-off this morning, all rocking them. I love the energy already, and I can't wait for playoff hockey. Go Canucks, go. Yeah, I saw a few car flags around town. And what I was wondering,
been a while,
are these new car flags, or were they dug out of storage?
I think the majority of people that have texted in said that they had them in storage.
If it has a Vancouver word mark, then you know.
Oh, right.
Because they would have taken that out for any new car flag.
The branding, yes. I'm very curious.
I haven't seen them for sale anywhere, though.
Yeah.
Do you remember, like, everyone was selling car flags?
2011 car flags were hot.
Yeah. Why not this year? I love car flags.
I know.
Car flags.
They haven't been shipped yet. I'm sure they'll be in stores.
Actually, that's true.
Yeah, but you want to get ahead of it. It's like on Sunday or whatever.
Fanatics is running the operation. So.
Oh yeah.
But where would you get like gas stations were selling them in Canadian Tire
Canadian
and that
Tire.
Sort of thing.
Canadian Tire's got some car flags.
I had a Johnny Canuck one that, but I have no idea where that is. I probably threw it out in like a rage.
Yeah. Will
threw it to the fire pit and set it ablaze.
A signature of Jason's old apartment, aside from like three knives, a fork, and two cups, was the majority of his dish towels and tea towels were old Canucks towels that they would give
out. Oh, yeah. Whatever happened to those?
Are they going to be giving out white towels game one? Need to know. I mean,
The towels will be there for sure.
They have to.
1,000%.
Right? Those cost the money.
Could
though.
I just say
1,000%.
How excited I am to be working in sports radio when my team is in the playoffs, because this is a first for me. I've been in almost 10 years.
That is insane.
Almost 10 years now for me.
Well, you were only 7 years old back
then.
It's true.
And now you're
almost
a big
10
boy.
Years now, and the only time it kind of counts is the bubble, but I don't really count that just because it felt so different with no fans. The city just wasn't in the same state, right? It just didn't feel like playoff hockey in Vancouver because of what we were all going through at the time, right?
I actually try to forget the bubble.
Yeah, it's just it doesn't feel real to me. This, though, however, feels fantastic, and I'm really, really excited.
I try to forget that whole time frame. The entire
wasn't great.
Entirety of it.
Wasn't a lot of fun.
Not the best.
Basketball, Phil, what we learned, Jonte Porter had the opportunity to be an NBA number 8 or 9th man off the bench. That guy makes around $7 to $10 million a year. He threw it away for some $15 prop bets on himself going under. This is one of the stupidest things I have seen in sports in a long time.
Yes. I don't think Jonte Porter gave his actions enough thought because
No.
Hot take horn.
I don't think Wait for it. I think Jonte Porter might not have thought this one through.
Yeah. Well, the dumbest one by far was the $80,000 parlay that paid out $1.1 million.
The returns are
nothing. On Jonte Porter props.
But the returns were nowhere good enough. Even if you're one of the dumbest people alive, you had to look at the returns and be like, this isn't worth it.
Did you see his actual returns? They calculated the smallest.
Yeah,
like
20 grand.
It was like 20 grand.
He was losing some
You lose
of
your
bets.
Entire NBA career over 20 grand.
Jonte, you're supposed to be fixing
these bets. It's
pathetic,
know.
Honestly.
It really is.
Unsigned text came in.
Can you think of all the hard work? You know, like, and he did it. But, man, what a waste.
Unsigned text, so it must be from Gary. We've had a couple in this vein. Hashtag WWL, what we learned. Thomas Drance thinks Nashville is better than Nashville thinks Nashville is.
Yeah, Drancer needs to give, like, the pump-up speech for the Preds, and it'll be, like, all sorts of charts and stuff that they don't understand. It's like, look at this expected goals for per 60. You guys are unbelievable
at
generating chances. And they're like, you're damn right we are.
Granted, I wasn't listening, but I didn't feel that. I didn't feel that he was so effusive in his praise that we needed clapbacks. Seemed like it was a fairly accurate assessment of what he thought of a team that was like had almost 100 points and is a playoff team in the West.
People just don't want to hear that our opponent is good because they want the pump ups, right?
Okay, but I
just look at the I will be if the Canucks stay healthy and nothing crazy happens, if they just play this out and the Canucks lose this series, Mount Bruff will be coming out for sure because this is a series
now
that they need to win.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But now, like, I will reserve the right to be, you know, if God forbid one of the key players gets hurt,
what if they get goalied,
or I will reserve the right to,
because you said that earlier. Right?
Yeah,
you said
every game is 50-20
shots.
If they do get goalied,
like if they dominate and they get goalied by Saros, it might be. Well, it probably won't be a Mount Bruff, but like, just
I don't know. I
like,
hate that. That's almost more frustrating.
If they can't find a way to get advantages in their forward group against this forward group, I will be looking for someone to blame. Whether that's Tocchet, Pedersen, Miller,
I will
Lindholm.
Be lashing out. I predict
I will
the lashing.
I will be lashing out. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
I predict the lashing.
Yeah.
I'll say this.
I will
be very immature, not handle this well.
Yeah. I will not contribute to the positive mindset that the Canucks will need in order to come back next season and have a better season. I will not contribute to that.
Lacking all composure.
Yes. Maybe tears.
The
I will hope to make someone cry.
You know, I don't know if Bruff, if Dran Lance mentioned this in his long rambling soliloquy, but the Preds' penalty kill is statistically is actually worse than Vancouver's this year. Now, the question is, will Vancouver get on the power play enough to make that a factor? Because the one doomsday scenario here is that the refs, for some reason or another, either don't give the power plays or put their whistles away, and then it becomes a five-on-five series, and that's where you get goalied. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you're generating enough chances at five-on-five, but Saros stands on his head. I mean, then I'm going to be in one of those weird, like, well, you know, Nashville was probably the inferior opponent, but that kind of thing, right? But I agree with you. On paper, you know, I think a lot of when we get the series odds fleshed out from all the different books and everything, I think Vancouver is going to be favored. And that's because they've got home ice advantage.
Of course they'll be favored.
They will be favored.
They will be favored. Yeah. Sure. So like, there's not going to be any really gray area about they're going to be expected to win.
But people will make them their hot take, like, pick to get upset in the first round.
Well, because
of
the run Nashville had, too.
Yeah.
By the way, 4-5-1 in their last 10.
My buddy Benny from the Sports Exchange on Burrard just texted me. He said, I will have 100 car flags at the Sports Exchange by tomorrow. Benny, you will have 99 car flags at the Sports Exchange by tomorrow, because my commission for saying that is one car flag.
I think you should give all of us one.
Do you have a car?
I don't. That's beside the point.
Benny, can you also give Andy a car?
and then a flag to put it on.
2151 Burrard Street in Vancouver, the Sports Exchange. They will have car flags. There you go, answering that question.
Is Fanatics making
that? Andrew in Victoria, what we learn, every hockey fan outside Toronto is happy not having to listen to nauseating 70-goal talk between now and the playoffs being rammed down our throats by Sportsnet, blah, and TSN.
What's TSN?
I don't know. Tyson Foods, I think.
I didn't mind the 70-goal thing, like the conversation, the intrigue. It is a pretty monumental mark. But in typical Eastern media fashion, they just ate themselves.
They overdid it.
The little circle under Matthews.
There was that. They did
followed him around on the ice every time he was out.
The EA Sports spot shadow. It's like, hey, there's a circle on the guy that you're controlling.
Tomorrow would have been a national holiday if you.
Yeah, most people were watching. Like, yep, we know his number.
When I saw
score 70, do I have to go into work tomorrow?
When I saw the television Chiron yesterday, is it Chiron or Chiron? I think it's Chiron. Whatever.
They call it a lower third, please.
Okay, the lower third, and it was the question. Did Austin Matthews' 70 goal chase become a distraction? I was like, you guys made it the distraction. Like, you can't blame him. He just went out there and tried to play hockey. Like, that's when the media.
Sheldon Keefe was getting so tired of it, though, could tell.
But that's those guys.
One of the many times that Sheldon Keefe has just been, like, exasperated this whole season.
Also, William Nylander was, like, a point away from 100, and they weren't even trying to get him the puck.
They don't care about that.
He's never hit 100
his
before.
His play dipped a little after he signed his contract, eh?
Yeah.
That's going to be an interesting. A number of interesting things for me in that Leafs series, especially if the Leafs don't win. How will Nylander play in that series? Because he was, I think, the best Leaf in last year's playoffs.
He's the only one that shows up in playoffs.
Right.
But if he gets paid and then doesn't show up in the playoffs, that's going to be interesting. And is Sheldon Keefe, I know he's got an extension, but is he coaching for his...
Who are we taking in that series? You guys want to put it out there right now?
You know
who
what?
Who are Leafs starting in goal? That would be my first question.
I don't know.
I will always bet against the Leafs.
Yeah, me too.
Always.
Boston. I don't even think Boston's that good, and I think Boston's
Samsonov, go with the Bruins.
Yeah, you
I
know
feel
what?
Like the Leafs have this incredible ability to shoot themselves in the foot.
Mm-hmm.
That it's almost, it doesn't matter who the opponent is. They'll be there, you know, Elmer Fudd style with the shot. Just
did it against Columbus.
Take your pick.
I'm going to say the Leafs, though. I'll be the guy that says the Leafs, because I think up front, especially down the middle, the Leafs are going to have the advantage.
So classic Leafs lover.
Love those guys. Just live and die with
Toronto native Jason Brough.
Noted Toronto homer Jason Brough says Toronto. I say Boston. A-Dog says Boston. Laddie?
Mine hinges on who's in goal. If it's Samsonov, Boston. If it's Wall, I will go with Brough.
I hope we hear a lot of,
and their fake goal horn.
Yeah, that I know that probably makes
a lot
of
who do you
want
to see lose the most out of every team? I mean, for me, it's Vegas. Although Toronto would be hilarious, as would Edmonton. But Vegas for me, just because I hate them so much.
Who would I want to see lose the most?
Here's the thing. If Edmonton and Vegas play in the first round, I will be pulling for Vegas.
Yeah.
Yeah, Edmonton losing in the first round would be quite funny.
even though I hate Vegas. But then after that, I'd be rooting
against Vegas.
I like
McDavid, though. That's the problem.
I want him to get angrier and
it kind of depends on it. Kind of depends on what the Canucks do.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say, if it becomes Vegas, which if Vegas wins tonight in any fashion, they clinch third. I want Vegas to beat Edmonton because I think it'll be more catastrophic.
If the Canucks get through Nashville before the Vegas-Edmonton series is over, then I will definitely be cheering for the Oilers because I'd much rather the Canucks play the Oilers than Vegas.
And then I will be obviously rooting for Toronto or Boston to take care of Toronto, hopefully in a sweep.
I'm going to say the Rangers because I think that would be hilarious.
Actually, Washington somehow winning a playoff
series. Nothing against the Rangers, really. I'm kind of like, I don't really care about the Rangers, you know, one way or the other. But if a team with a minus 37 goal differential manages to beat a team with a plus 53 goal differential,
yeah, that'd be awesome.
Will be hilarious.
There has not been a more just happy to be here playoff team than Washington in like the last decade.
It was the worst goal differential since 1991.
They might not even be happy to be there. They were like, God, we made it?
Yeah. Like, they're going to get to New York.
I thought we were going to get a vacation now.
Like South Park episode where they're on the
they're
going
to show up to New York like tourists. They're going to take pictures of the Empire State Building and they're going to be like, this is awesome.
This city's great.
Also, we have to play the playoff series. Okay, we got to go, but we will be back tomorrow. Robbie Stanley's going to join us from Nashville Radio, now our mortal enemy as we go toe-to-toe ahead of this weekend and whenever the Canucks open their playoff series against the Predators. For now, though, we got to say goodbye. Signing off, I have been Mike Alford. He's been Jason Brough. He's been A-Dog, and he's been Laddie. This has been the Alford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.